The Upper Peninsula's 110th State House District covers nearly seven counties, from Marquette County to the tip of the Keweenaw Peninsula, about 6,000 square miles. Three of the counties are among the five poorest in the state. Representing the district is UP native Scott Dianda of Calumet, a Democrat who's been consistently calling for state program levels adequate to keep rural communities on their feet, working and growing. We'll talk to Representative Dianda about characteristics and needs of the 110th, the fiscal 2018 state budget, and key issues affecting the Upper Peninsula, just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guest is 110th District State Representative Scott Dianda. Joining me on the panel, Great Lakes Radio News Director Walt Lindela. Welcome.
Gentlemen, good to see you both.
Thank you.
By way of context, the 110th House District, as we mentioned, extends over seven counties, west to north from Marquette County, all the way up through the Copper Country. It's less populated than average. And it also has three of the five poorest counties by income in the state. You're in your third term. What were your goals coming in? How have they fared? And which of your key concerns now seem to point to similar issues across the region?
Well, I think number one, you know, we do come from an area that has a lot of population that we lost over the years from, you know, the downsizing of the copper mining back in the heyday in the Copper Country. So, you know, what I see is the fact that we do have a lot of good points that are happening because they see the industry coming back, just like in Marquette County with the Eagle Mine Project. Mm-hmm. You know, the world is looking for minerals, and the good Lord blessed us here in the Copper Country along with the whole entire Upper Peninsula to have those minerals available, and I think that that's part of our growth. And it's just not there. It's a lot of things that I see that's the challenge in all these other counties. It's jobs. Jobs are what makes and breaks all of this state, and it makes our population either increase or decrease. And I think that we have a great future, and I think that in the last 5 years of us being in the House, we have seen a lot more investment. We've seen the Eagle Mine Project. We have starting to look at all these investors that are taking a look at the natural resources that we have up here to be able to do very good extraction and making sure it's safe.
Make sure it's clean and safe. In June, the governor signed a $56 billion state budget that includes increases for education, increased revenue sharing for municipalities, funds to keep the transportation plan on track, and continued funding for Healthy Michigan, which is the state's Medicaid expansion program. The budget overall has increased spending by about $2 billion since Governor Rick Snyder took office. You rejected the 2018 budget, saying, in effect, that funding levels don't go far enough to deliver what's needed for communities you serve. I appreciate your comments on categories.
Sure. Well, you know what? In the last four budgets that I've been on, you know, I just had a chance to be able to look at what our perspective was in these seven counties.
Okay.
And I think that that's the reason that I always vote no on the budget, because it's a point of contention with a lot of folks in the legislature. You know, in the last 4 years, we went from about a $46 billion budget to about a 55.3%.
Right.
And what we're looking at is, in my mind, when we have independent reports that come out where we need $1,000 per pupil, when we only put $25 to $35 per pupil across the state, it's just not doing absolutely nothing, in my mind. It's not keeping up with the cost of what's out there.
So the better-off school districts are getting less per pupil, and the poor districts are getting more. How do you square that?
Well, I think that, you know, this is an education funding perspective that needs to be changed. You know, across the state of Michigan, we have to start looking at having an equal playing field, because a student up in one of these seven counties is just as valuable as any other county across Michigan. Mm-hmm. And when we see that our school districts get about $7,600 per student, and downstate they can get anywhere from $12,000 to $14,000 in the distressed area, our areas, in my argument, is always we are just as distressed financially up here, and we got to have the baseline. And I think that when we can go out eventually in the future and start taking a look at what is the true cost of education across 83 counties, how much money are we going to spend? It's easy, very easy math. We got to be able to figure out what we're going to spend statewide and divide by the number of students we have so everybody is on a level playing field, because that's what's going to raise all the ships across the sea.
Okay. One of the things I know you've always said is you are a definite advocate of saying, you know, the one-size-fits-all approach does not work. Are there more areas in the state that are actually similar to what's in the Western UP in terms of economic challenges? And if so, how are you working to bridge those together to increase these funding formulas to get the parity you're asking for?
Well, what we've been trying to do, Walt, is to be able to look at all of the other representatives and senators that are in these rural areas, because they face the same challenges with their school districts. They face the fact that we lose population in these areas, our student numbers are going down, and our employment is going with it. And I think that to have the discussion out there with our rural people, they get it, because they see it. They're not in the metropolitan areas, and they see that it's a very tough go if we don't have true skilled trades people that are trained in that school. And I think that's the key to it. I think that, you know, us in Michigan have to have the discussion of having an independent school system controlled by our local school board. Because if we're in Baraga County and we are going to start producing more welders to satisfy that industry in that area, or if you're at Marinette Marine South in the UP, we should be looking at having the ability to specialize. And if you're in Marquette or if you're in Houghton dealing with a university town, you want to be able to have the flexibility out there. And I think that's the big thing that all my other rural colleagues are seeing on both sides of the aisle.
You have a fairly unique district in the sense of you have a public university, you have a private university, you have community colleges all within these seven counties. What is the balance that you hope to find with those different types of learning institutions, but still receiving the funding that most of them would require?
I think the best thing that we have up here is we have the diversity. We have the diversity of the high-tech situation like Michigan Tech to be able to have cutting-edge technology from the most technical thing of satellite production. And then we also have a lot of the community colleges that teach the most basic skill trades that we all count on every day with having an electrician or having a carpenter. So I think that we do have the most unique opportunities in the seven counties, because we have the diversity to fit our people from one end of the spectrum to the other. But I think that, you know, when it comes to a funding source and when we start looking at the state budget, it has to be a priority to fund not just higher ed, the K through 12, and the community colleges. Those are the things that are so important to me. And when I look at a budget and I see that, you know, there's a lot of corporate tax cuts out there that really are not providing a lot of the jobs, I really feel that the better bang for the buck is to make sure that that money is invested in the school districts and in the colleges and community colleges.
You and I recently spoke also about your stance on career and technical education. You've been a strong advocate for that. You are calling for funding for that and increased lines of study that way, especially in K through 12, high school,
yes,
that era. Why is that important to you, and do you feel that there's still some aversion to career and technical education, that somehow it's still misconceived as not as important as higher ed?
I think that a lot of people, when we start talking about skilled trades, they start to think, well, it's just the carpenter, the welder, the plumber, electrician. Now we're starting to see where there's these growth industries out there that we need skilled trades people that can be trained in our K through 12 system, and that is a dental hygienist. Something that is growing in leaps and bounds. We got people that are retiring, we're having a hard time filling those positions. Also with nurse anesthetists. We are starting to see there's a lot of change in the healthcare, and those are the things that I think that are so important to us, because in our seven counties and across the UP, we can specialize in these things. And if we have a school district that may be sitting right here in Marquette County in the nice school district, and if they wanted to be able to specialize to crank out dental hygienist that would have a good $25 an hour start job, that's what I'm looking at, because I think that is what's really going to propel us to be able to include everyone from a skilled trade level to also the student that wants to go out and create the next satellite.
Let's talk about the, you know, attracting the right teachers and those sorts of people to be, you know, to do this job. Relevant to education legislation recently gave us a new Michigan Public School Employees Retirement System, which has over $29 million in unfunded liabilities. New teachers will no longer have the option of a traditional retirement. You know, large debts from legacy programs are haunting states across the country, and It currently accounts for a third of school district spending in Michigan. You rejected the GOP solution to shift from a defined benefit system. First, why? And secondly, what would be a real alternative that addressed the debt?
$29 billion. Think that, you know, it's like everything else that we talk about with state-level government or on the federal level. How will we make Social Security more solvent? We have to get more people working and paying into it. And I'm a big supporter of the fact that if the more people that we have paying into those systems, I think that it would go long term. We'd have to take a look at funding the old retirement system to make sure that maybe we got to take and tweak how long people are going to work. People are living longer, mm-hmm. You know, that's going to have to be the discussion out there. And I think that we never had that discussion. And I think that if we would have...
keep hitting at it, and we don't seem to get
right.
there.
Right. I mean, you know, if we changed how many years instead of a traditional 30 years, and if you had to go to a 34 or a 35, I mean, that is kind of where we would have...
Doesn't it depend on what you do, though? I mean, if you're a guy, I know a lot of carpenters who worked their whole sure. life, and I don't think they could hold out another 10 years.
Right. Well, I'm just saying in basic with the educational system yeah. for teachers, I think that that would have been something we could have really discussed more on. And I think the other thing that we got to look at, too, is the fact that, you know, I'm sitting here on this campus with Northern, and last year we only graduated 7 students in education out of Northern. That's troubling to me because yeah. as we are retiring these teachers, who's going to get into the profession?
Yeah, who wants to get into it under those terms?
Right.
That's what you're saying?
I definitely say that. And I think that we have to start looking at these professions like we did years ago with more respect. And to have this constant attack on working teachers is just ludicrous. I think that it's totally off board to be able to say that the teachers were the problem with trying to balance that budget, whether it's with their normal pay, whether it's retirement or their insurance. I think that people got to understand now, once we get the people out of education that have the passion, are we ever going to have the money to get those people to come back? And I think the answer is going to be very, very complex in the future.
Okay. Another topic I know you raised continually was revenue sharing, which has been underfunded by local government estimations since at least 2001. Is that about right?
That's correct.
Where are we? Where should we be? And how do we pay for it?
Well, since 1988, we have lost $5.5 billion in revenue sharing. And that's why, you know, I was just over in Cook's at the corn roast yesterday. And, you know, that's why these folks are having corn sales and they're selling raffle tickets, because they're trying to pay for things that years ago we had the state revenue sharing would help with buying fire trucks.
Okay.
And this is the example I use to people is that, you know, every year in Lansing for the last 5 years, I talked about the budget before, it's grown to $55.4 billion. And the revenue sharing has gotten one way, it has been going south for the locals. And I think that we got to really start taking a look at where our priorities are. And I've always been an opponent of being able to bring back those dollars to the locals. They can spend a dollar. They know how to administrate it very well. And I think that, you know, there's just a lot of agencies that I feel personally we could do a lot better with state resources and a lot of shared partnership.
How would you find the formula? What would be some of the things you'd be looking for to try to even it out or get back to those numbers?
Well, to get back to the numbers, what I would say is that when we look at each one of these budgets for a state level, what are we doing? Are we doing duplication on the local level? And I think there's going to have to be in the future some very much shared partnerships between the county government and the state government. I think every aspect of all the state agencies have to look at this. And if we look at road commissions and the state highway department, we're going to have to find out the things that work the best for the county to be able to take care of on a local level and the state to be able to operate in other capacities.
Where does privatization fall into that idea?
Well, I think that, again, we have a lot of the contracted counties for the road commissions that are acting right now in the best interest of the county, the road system, and I think that those things could be addressed more, what would bring more money back into the locals' pocket by having the road commissions, which are public entities, to be able to do that rather than having it contracted out to a private company.
Okay. I'd like to talk about transportation a little bit, but I want to make one more point related to this, revenue sharing in a little different direction. You called revenue sharing and property tax losses from dark store assessments a perfect storm for small communities. The House voted last session to resolve the tax issue for small communities. You were involved in that, but the Senate failed to follow through. What are your expectations for reform at this point? I just recently talked to Senators Tom Casperson and Darwin Boer. They want reform. They want more income-based assessments.
Well, I think that what needs to happen on that level with the Dark Store initiative is the fact that we have to have a very good conversation with the Chamber of Commerce. They do not want to see the Dark Store carve-out go away. They think that has a better, it has a good tax advantage for a lot of these corporate stores, mm-hmm. and they're worried that they're going to lose out on business. But you know, myself, small business owner, also member of the chamber, yeah. you know, we all pay dues into these groups to be able to have fair representation. And what happens is that, you know, through the tax tribunal, the big box stores do get a carve out, but Ma and Pa Kettle on the main street of Washington here in Marquette County, mm-hmm. in Marquette City does not. So I think that, you know, that's where the discussion has to be. And us in the legislature have to understand that if we're not going to give back the revenue sharing to the locals, that we have to close that loophole on the dark stores. And I think that a lot of groups out there are really going to have to hold my feet to the fire along with the future candidates of this state. Yeah. Because I'm here to tell you that when you go in front of the Association of Counties or the Michigan Municipal League, that is going to be one of the most important things that they get right in the next election. They're going to have to make sure that they endorse people and get people elected that it's going to close that loophole, because we see it so clearly up here because our areas are small and our budgets are very restrained. When you're going downstate, you see more of these budgets that are on a bigger scale for the counties, and it doesn't hit them as much in that light, but it's coming because yeah. everybody's going to have that carve out. And what troubles me the most is it's not just going to stop with the big box stores. This could also be done on a residential level. Mm-hmm. You could have somebody who's a sports figure move into Marquette County and say, I'm going to build myself a new home with an indoor ice arena. I'm putting my name in there with the colors of the team I played on. They would be also able to go and look for that tax abatement. So it's going to go across all boards. And I think that that's something that we got to realize, and it has to be done.
Yeah. You mentioned that communities are kind of spread out in the UP, which is probably an understatement. We've got one person per 14 square miles, I think, in your district.
Yes.
That's a big one. Transportation funding was complicated by the fact that voters turned down a plan that would have provided more funds than we've seen since, and it's complicated by new taxes, fees, and things like that. It appears the state is reluctant to spend what's required to bring roads truly up to standard. How do you see it?
Well, I see it very clearly, because right now we're spending about $5.4 billion annually for the road system. And, you know, we have to get back to the basics. And I think that, again, when we look at a state agency, the Department of Transportation, we really have to eliminate all of the other things besides fixing the roads and fixing the bridges. And I think that, again, when we start looking at these agencies, I think there's a lot of room for improvement. Mm-hmm. You know, we look at, in the 1950s, we built the entire expressway system throughout this great state and the country. And they did it with just having construction trailers, and they had people that were mobile. And I think that right now, in this last 10 years, we've created a lot bigger system than what we need. Mm-hmm. And that's costly. And I'm here to say that, you know, when we look at the taxation that came, where 80% of the public said no, and then the legislature wanted to implement that, I ask people all the time, the extra $640 million that was raised, are we really seeing the bang for the buck? A lot of that money, the $240 million, has been put on the debt services that we have had for the last 20 years to pay for a lot of these projects, and those projects now are falling apart. So I think that we really got to take a look at what are we going to do in the future to build a better product, and making sure that every dollar that we spend in the Department of Transportation, that 80% of it's going to hit that road system, because that's what we have to fix.
You also have costs and fees directly at residents. Tell us about House Bill 4251.
Well, I put the House bill in because I was just, you know, talking to a lot of my constituents. We got people that just cannot afford to have another $120 put on their household budget. I mean, when we're talking
that's
about...
That's registration fees.
That's the registration fees, yes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when we start to talk to a lot of people that are paying an extra $50 per year on a plow truck that never leaves the property, yeah. I mean, and that's, we were talking about a lot of the UP there. You know, and I think that ultimately...
And it's a lot, a 20% increase in fees.
Is.
Beginning this year. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the vehicles and the household budgets up here in the UP is one of the costliest things we have with the insurance and now the registration increase. And I think that people are just to the point where they really always want to pay if they see that their dollars are going for good value. Mm-hmm. And I still maintain the fact that at $5.4 billion, and if we're going to throw, if it's not being fixed now, I don't see another $600 million getting them fixed. I think that we have to take a look at going back to the basics and creating a better system.
Now, shifting gears a little bit, Governor Rick Snyder and Republican lawmakers were advocates of this Good Jobs for Michigan legislation that recently made it through. You're a Democrat. You came out very publicly in favor of this legislation.
Yes.
What do you like about this legislation? How is it going to work to help out businesses here in the UP?
Well, it's going to help out the UP by saying that we are open to all business, and that's why I supported the governor on this piece of legislation. We need to be able to attract anybody that wants to come to Michigan. We're to the point we're losing population in the state. We're fighting with other states across the nation to get new businesses from a lot of these overseas companies, and we need to make sure that they have an ability to come in here and knowing that we're open for business. I just would have wished that we could have ended up getting that legislation done faster in our normal session, because I think that we would have had more of an opportunity to attract the company of Foxconn. And I think that
Which
went to Wisconsin, unfortunately.
In fact, it seemed like the original bill was aimed at Foxconn.
Yes, it was.
Attracting Foxconn.
And I think that that's where we got to keep our focus on, is that we have to make sure that people outside of Michigan know that capital is welcome in Michigan, and we want to make sure that they stay here. And any new business that we look at, especially when we're talking about liquid crystal screens that Foxconn makes, there's not a place that I don't go that I don't see somebody with a smartphone or a tablet. Mm-hmm. It's the microwave oven of this century. And okay. I really think that that's what we got to start focusing on, to make sure that people know we're here to have business in Michigan. Mm-hmm. We've got very good people that I want to work very hard, and they're skilled, and we need to attract them.
Now, for that change, you know, the changes in more higher tech or new technology manufacturing, there doesn't seem to be any reason why it couldn't be made up here.
I think
maybe
transportation. Well, even when we start looking at a lot of these things with transportation, you know, we're starting to see that, you know, those liquid crystal screens, how much of that stuff is being sent on just common freight. I think that we're not talking about mining operations where we need heavy rail.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that technology is something that's crucial that we really need to focus on, and making sure that Michigan's in a position when we see the new type of industry that's going to evolve, we got to be right there to get them here.
Critics of the Foxconn deal with Wisconsin say that it's giving away almost too much to get that. Is there a risk, and how do you balance that?
Well, I think the balance is number one with the jobs and the payroll. You know, if we're going to be able to see that Wisconsin's going to gain 5,000 jobs and those jobs are going to be there long term, I think that's where we got to weigh out what are they getting, what are they investing, and how long are they going to stay, and how many people are going to be able to be there long term. I think that is everything on my mind when I go around talking to any business that wants to expand or they want to take a look and see if this legislation is going to help them. Because there's $200 million sitting here across the state for any new company that wants to come into Michigan.
Okay, we obviously need the infrastructure to grow any of these businesses. On energy, you've called for lower rates by introducing competition and choice via more local and distributed generation, net metering and the like. We now have a project to replace the outdated power plant at Presque Isle, but the net metering cap has already been exceeded. It's 1%, fairly low. We don't seem to have the infrastructure to make ready use of renewables that actually improve grid reliability. Do you see an immediate way forward in concrete terms?
I do. I think that number one is that what we need to be working on is number one with our federal partners. We have to take a look at these service territories. I think that this is something that makes a lot of the bigger energy companies upset. But when we start talking about the true problem, The problem that always comes back to the same conversation is they never have enough customers. If you look at the small footprints that they do have, there's many of them across the UP. There's many service territories. I think that's one of the issues. I think the second issue is the fact that we have to really take a look at how this technology is going to change. And I think a prime example of it was Board of Light here right in Marquette City. Mm-hmm. You know, their average is about 12 to 13, 14 cents a kilowatt versus a lot of the other prints across the state here where they're in the footprint where we're paying up to 26 cents a kilowatt. You know, and I think that when you start looking at these service territories and power that may come in from outside of Michigan, you know, we see that with Xcel over in Ironwood. Those folks are paying around 7 to 8 cents a kilowatt. So when we're over there, we're going through Gogeba County, not a problem for energy discussion. Every other place, when I go to Germfast or I'm in the other parts of these service territories, it is a big problem. And I think the only way we're going to be able to expand the UP is to be able to have energy rates for residential and commercial carriers that is going to be lower.
So we seem to have a shift away from just a straight cost of service to the development end of it, which is a big slog. I mean, it costs money to bring these things up. What do you see as an alternative? Is there an alternative to that, or just more distributed energy?
Well, I think that the distribution costs a lot of money, and that's why I was totally against bridging the Upper Peninsula and the Lower Peninsula together, because that was going to be over $2 billion for that process. And that would have been spread across all 9.5 million of us across Michigan. It was a cost that nobody wanted to bear, especially only to help us wonderful 3% up here in the UP. But I really do believe that, you know, by having more local power generation, to have a better system where we start looking at some of this technology with the solar, so we don't have to expand all these lines, but we build a lot of smaller plants across the Upper Peninsula to make sure we got regional power, and it makes a smaller grid.
Utilities seem to be getting the message across the country, but it takes a while.
It does. And some of the other states that we look at, I'm on the Energy Committee, and we have a lot of testimony from other states where these companies have embraced this change, and they're very successful with it. So I hope that, you know, in the future we see a lot more discussion in Michigan, and I want to see more in the UP, because evidently nobody is happy with their power bill, including me.
I'm afraid we have to leave it there for time. We've been talking about state issues with 110th District State Representative Scott Dianda of Calumet. Joining me on the panel, Great Lakes Radio News Director Walt Lindelah. Thank you
good
so much
you
for
both.
Being here.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.